Damn it, Art. Me and my big mouth. Remind me not to agree to shit when I'm on a two-day drunk. How smashed was I when I messaged the other night? I don't remember half of what the hell I was saying. But now that I'm on the other side of sober, I'm having second thoughts. I mean, I need the money. But is it worth risking my neck? Is it worth risking infection? Ava's determined, but it's obvious she doesn't understand what she's asking. First of all, there's the fact of the distance. It's at least 6 days' travel through woods with no roads. Then there's the possibility of encountering locals. Some of the tribes are friendly enough, but not all of them. And finally, and more importantly, there's the frost. Yeah, I've seen what happens to people who spend too long outside the boundary. I've seen the infected firsthand, and what Vantage does to them. And New Oasis might as well be the epicenter. I told Ava all of this, but she's undeterred. She has all the supplies, including the respirators we'll need once we're out beyond the boundary. I even upped my fee. But she called my bluff. Double the price. She didn't even bat an eye. It was too good to pass up. I guess if anyone ever asks whatever happened to that loudmouth tie, you can tell them what happened. Maybe give them an idea of where they can look for my idiot body.
Inspector Stokes, case report 7599-Bravo. I spent the morning at Miller's farm. Dr. Kim had done autopsies of a few of the dead animals. After studying the reports, I had questions. Figured it might be good to take a look firsthand. The family dog was one of the casualties. Its death had been caused by strangulation. Doc said she found bruise marks on the dog's neck. The Millers had been raising chickens as well. All of these had their heads tore off, but otherwise there was no evidence that any of the animals, in this attack or the others, were fed on by some kind of predator. Why the senseless killing of animals? Fear? The only other evidence of the attack were the fields themselves. All of the rows of Baru had been torn up from the ground. Pieces of the plant were scattered everywhere. Statements had already been taken by the patrols, but I spoke to the farmers anyway. It was a young couple. They were both still rattled by the experience. They said it happened late in the evening. They heard noises outside, sounded like footsteps. When they heard something banging on their barn roof, they went to investigate. When they did, something ran off into the trees. They found the dog dead in the field. I took the rest of the afternoon to check in on each of the farms nearby. Most of them had heard of the attacks. A few had taken measures to increase their security, but others had already decided to give up and move back to the colony. Vantage wouldn't like that. The last farm I visited was the furthest out. It was run by only one man. His name was Abe Cobb. He seemed like a good guy. Earnest, hardworking. He said he was awaiting the arrival of his family. He had over 10 fields, most of which, he said, were going to produce the biggest Baru harvest of anywhere in this region. Oddly enough, he was the only one who hadn't heard or seen anything. I couldn't quite pinpoint it at the time, but the farm had felt familiar to me, like I'd seen it before. When I got back to HQ, I double-checked the database. Sure enough, I was right. Cobb's farm used to belong to a young family, Jacob and Tilly Copeland, and their infant child. They had died in a tragic incident years ago. I don't know how I could have forgotten. The details in the report were disturbing. The husband Jacob was attacked and killed in the forest while on his way to Sutter Station. The body was badly mauled. The wife, Tilly, smothered their child and took her own life.
Thank you. This is Shaw. We're a day's journey from the outskirts of Sutter Station. We passed the last remnants of human civilization earlier this morning, a small farm and homestead located on the edge of the tree line. A few of the settlers watched us pass, but otherwise, our party and mission has garnered little notice from the locals or authorities. We're deep in the forest now. No one comes out this far. With no more trails or rover tracks to follow, travel has become much more difficult. The tree canopy ensures constant darkness, even during the daylight hours. It's rained on and off since we began, but we've come prepared with ponchos and watertight packs and boots, so it's done little to slow us down. If our maps are correct, I'd suspect we're at least another 2 days from Ashborough, which would mean our destination is another 2 days beyond that. This afternoon we passed through the burned swathe of land that Vantage and Colness referred to as the Boundary. Once on the other side, we saw traces of the Crimson Frost immediately. You can almost mistake the red shades as a natural colouring of the leaves and bark. Only if you look closely can you see the growths. These sightings have only grown more abundant as we continue. The red gets even more vibrant, and the patches have grown larger. We'll be wearing our respirators at all times from here on out, even when we sleep. The rest of the team keeps to themselves. This is fine by me. Despite my earlier grievances, I'll admit, Oasis did good work in its recruiting for this mission. I'm pleased to know that most, if not all of them, have a military background. The combat training is unnecessary, but I'll be glad to have it if there's any trouble. I've spent each night listening and re-listening to the tapes you provided of Dr. Wood's recordings. Originally, I'd hoped there might be more clues to her prison location, but I found there are little specifics in that regard. Still, the accounts of her living with the savages are quite extraordinary. In particular, her revelations regarding the Ashborough colony.
This is Dr. Wood. It's been 3 weeks since my last message. I would have liked to provide updates more often, but given the limited battery life of my communicator and my inability to charge it, I need to conserve power. I don't know if I'll ever have this opportunity again, so I want to ensure I document as much as possible in the few transmissions I have left. The River people have fully accepted my presence among the tribe and treat me now as one of their own. They've been eager to show me their culture, demonstrate their skill, and share their knowledge of the land. I have endless questions, but my hosts are happy to answer all of them. In fact, communication has been surprisingly easy. I can't believe how quickly they assimilate our language. It's much faster than I'm able to learn theirs. I'm still struggling with basic words, and they're already speaking in whole phrases. I've taken as much advantage of this as I can. The tribe calls themselves the Lurik. At least that's the best I can pronounce it. They aren't the only ones. There are several tribes in this region. Each of them lives in different habitats. The Lurik prefer the river and marshlands. They're comfortable, even skilled in water. All of them are expert swimmers, and they frequently use canoes for hunting and fishing. The huts, which I perceived as simple when I first arrived, are anything but. Each of them is made to float on the water's surface, tethered to the banks. This allows the village to be mobile. The Lurik are a nomadic people, and they move up or downstream whenever there's a need to resituate. The other tribes on Kailus inhabit different environments, but are masters of it nonetheless. I won't try to pronounce all their names. There are warlike tribes, called the Gaul, who live in caves. They are skilled climbers and craftsmen. There are people who dwell entirely in the trees, in the forest much further north. I can't remember their names. And also some which live in the grasslands, far from here. My hosts have never met them, but the warriors here tell stories about a people who ride upon animals and hunt birds. While all of this is fascinating, most of my questions concern the frost, and more specifically, their treatment. Although complex scientific conversation is yet unattainable, I've been able to learn some basic facts. It seems the fungus is seasonal, and its propagation is varied. Its cycles can be minimal, lasting only a few months, or much more severe, multiple years, and encompassing thousands of acres. My host believed this is one of the more severe outbreaks they've seen in a generation. But they're not bothered, as they've had no trouble treating mild cases. Although, from what I understand, this knowledge might have been more the result of dumb luck than anything else. The same salve they use to treat me, a concoction of ground roots and berry paste, is what they use on all their wounds. It's somewhat of a cure-all. While I can't determine exact chemicals, I suspect some of the ingredients must include antiseptic properties. The Lurich may be the only tribe which uses this salve. Fortunately, they're willing to share its recipe. They've begun teaching me how to make this paste. Once I have it perfected, I'll return to the Nock right away.
Teddy, it's Mom. We left Sutter Station a few days ago. At first, I was glad to be out of that place. Glad to be on my way to Marie. But now that we're out here, on our own, I have to admit, I miss the crowds. It's unsettling. These trees. Almost eerie. In the daytime, the stillness gives me the feeling I'm being watched. In the night, is worse. It's a kind of complete blackness I've never experienced before. It's suffocating. Mr. Lincoln is hesitant to build a fire. He says it could attract predators or natives with unfriendly intentions. But after our first night, the dark was so unnerving, I insisted on one. The firelight is comforting, but I can hear things out there in the darkness. I try not to gaze between the tree trunks. I'm afraid I might catch sight of something looking back. Your aunt was always braver than me. Always. Even though she was the youngest. I sit here and for the first time in a long time, I'm struck by her courage. I realize how fearless she was, and I remember the message she sent me. She had been bound to a tree and left out here for days. I can't fathom that. But through all of it, her voice stayed so steady, so strong. The locals in Sutter Station say New Oasis is cursed. They said my mission was futile, but I know my sister. She must still be alive. Mr. Lincoln doesn't expect us to find anything either. He's made that clear. In fact, the day we left, he tried to back out of our agreement. He said that if anyone was still there, they were probably fanatics, the kind of people we wouldn't want to cross. That it would be best to go home and remember my sister as I knew her. It took some convincing. In the end, I had to double his payment. It makes me nervous, though. He's a reluctant guide. I asked him tonight, as we sat around the fire, if he knew your aunt. The New Oasis colony wasn't large, but he avoided specifics, said the children of the stars kept to themselves, didn't mingle with outsiders. He won't speak much about how he left, or when. All he says is that he escaped, and he was the only one who made it.
This is Dr. Wood. Today, my host revealed a startling truth. They have confirmed, without a doubt, that the lost colony, Ashborough, had been infected by the frost. They'd witnessed it all. The colonists had gone mad and wandered into the forest. But that's not all. The Ashborough colonization had been over 10 years ago, so it was always assumed that whatever had happened to them, they were all dead. Even if infected, either exposure, lack of food, water, or even animal attacks surely finished them off long ago. But the tribe insists these colonists are not dead. They still see them. When they first told me, I thought they were speaking in a mystical sense, as though they had encountered spirits. But the tribe was insistent. The bodies of the Ashborough colonists still walk through the trees. The fungus has had enough of a physiological effect to keep them alive. The tribe claims they see these creatures wandering at night. They call them Rashka. Those too far gone. Even now as I record this, I have trouble believing it. It's difficult to fathom. The mystery of the disappearance all those decades ago has been solved. The notorious lost colonists are not dead. Well, not dead exactly, but perhaps not alive either.
Dearest Hannah, a man from Vantage came to see me today. He said he was a special inspector out of Sutter Station. He was investigating some disturbances which have occurred on the farms nearby. You see, and I don't want to worry you. I know what I'm going to say will sound frightening. There have been a few attacks on the homesteads. Now, I don't honestly know too much about it. I suspect it's just some of the native folks stirring up trouble. Anyway, everyone's a little rattled, which is why the inspector wound up on my doorstep. I told him I hadn't had any trouble, which was the truth. But of course, after he left, well, I did see something. Something strange. Now listen, I don't want you to worry. I want to be honest with you, which is why I'm telling you this. I'm fine. Okay? Everything is fine here. It's an odd circumstance, that's all. After the inspector left, I set to repairing a section of fencing near the barn that had been knocked over by the storm last night. Well, as I finished, I happened to look out across the fields and, well, towards the trees, and, well, I saw people, or figures. They were at the far end of the field, too far away for me to make out any details, any features, but they weren't animals. They weren't natives. Not tall enough. They were people. And they were just standing there, motionless. If someone had told me they were statues, I might have believed it. There were five of them. Copper saw them too. He normally barks at everything, but he took one look and ran behind me and whimpered. Like he'd been scolded. I normally would have gone out there and said something. You know me, I don't scare easy. Not to any tough talk or task, or not to some trespassers on my property. But something held me back. I had this feeling that there were things I shouldn't mess with. And, well, if I went out there, well, I'd be messing with them, is all. So I just stood there. And they stood there. After I saw they weren't moving, I went inside for the rest of the day. Brought Copper in, too. were there all day. I didn't see him leave, but it's dark now. Too many clouds for moonlight. To be honest, though, even though I can't see them, I can almost imagine that they're still out there in the field, watching me.